Okay, well, hey, I'm glad everybody is here today and glad you guys came. And I know that many of you know that I am the work in the elementary department here at Stonebriar, and I just want to assure you that we don't talk about sex as a regular rule here at Stonebriar in the elementary department, so don't worry about that too much. But I do want to talk about today about preparing your kids for a sex-crazed world. The world that we live in today is not what it used to be. Remember shows like Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons and I Love Lucy? I mean, if you look at the pictures here, you see that we have married couples, which is rare in a lot of TV shows anyway, and also that they're using twin beds. They don't have them in the bed together, because back in the old days, we didn't show that kind of thing on TV. It's a little different than it used to be now. And it seems like our world has gotten to a place where it's worse than it's ever been, and that it's never been this bad before. But even back in Scripture, our world was in a really bad place several times, you know, all the way back to Noah. The world had gotten so bad, so full of sin, that God could only find one man who was considered holy and righteous, and him and his family. And God destroyed the entire world because the sin had gotten so bad in there. We look at Sodom and Gomorrah, a city, two cities that had gotten so terribly into sin and sex and all kinds of craziness that God destroyed that city as well. He couldn't find anybody in there that was righteous. David, King David, was one of what God considered a man after his own heart. He was righteous and he obeyed God, and he was a great king, but his lust with Bathsheba got him into a whole lot of trouble. You know, while her husband was away fighting for him, he saw her and thought she was beautiful and had the power to, and decided to have her come and had sex with her, got her pregnant, and then started a whole series of deception and trying to make it all better by having her husband come back from war and trying to get him to go and lay with his wife so it would look like he got her pregnant. And that didn't work, so he had her husband killed. All because he fell into lust, the sin of lust. Solomon, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. He was inundated in the culture of women there. And Samson also. Samson lost his strength because of the wiles of a woman, made him think that he needed to do what she wanted to do because he had lust for her and wanted to please her in that way. So as we see, sin's not a new problem. It's not going away either. Now, we can go back just a couple years ago when I was a little kid. And back then, we had no cell phones. I know, that's crazy. I know. Where are you? Get it? No cell phones. We had pay phones. We really did. Have y'all all used a pay phone? Y'all know what that is? This is not just where Superman changes his clothes, just so you know. My husband actually was a programmer still, but the job he had at the time, he carried a pager. Do you remember those? I thought that was so cool. Had the little phone number display in the top. And then if you're driving, you actually have to look around and find a pay phone that you can stop and pay money for or use a calling card to use so you can respond to your pager. So our television that we had a whopping 9 channels, and you had to get up off the couch to actually turn the knob. So you got like 4 channels on the top knob, and then you got about 3 extra ones, VHF and UHF. Do y'all remember that? And a lot of the times the UHF didn't work. So you know, sometimes you only had 6 channels. My mom was a huge fan of the TV show MASH. Have y'all ever watched MASH? Hilarious. He's distracted back there. Ding. No, he got distracted. MASH was the show, and my mom never let us watch it because she just didn't feel like it was appropriate, and it wasn't. But nowadays, it would probably be good. We actually did not have a computer in our home until, I don't know, I was probably in late high school or college, maybe. But we certainly didn't have internet access. Our computer, when we did finally get a PC, and I was like junior, senior in high school, or maybe freshman in college, had
amber. I thought it was cool because it wasn't green. It just had the amber. It had no graphics. It was just strictly basically an oversized calculator. It wasn't, there wasn't much danger in it. We actually use things like encyclopedias that are made from paper. I don't know if y'all know what that is. It's, you know, kind of like a book, and you go and you find your information and you spin pages and try to figure it out. So my parents, when we would go out to we would actually go and leave and say, hey, I'll be home at dinner, or they'd say, be back before dark. And then they didn't communicate with us. They trusted us, and we would go play. And we actually, this is called a slide. And there, that this right here, I know it's hard to see, but this is a swing set. And that's called a merry-go-round. And that would keep us entertained for hours on end. We could just play in a playground, or we could ride our bikes around the neighborhood. We'd be outside, get fresh air and exercise, and we'd do that for hours. Foul language was not something you heard a lot on TV. That was pretty rare until cable came out. And then I'm going to say this, the B word. Bras were not allowed to be shown on TV. I actually remember as a kid seeing a commercial for the first time where Playtex showed the Cross Your Heart bra on a mannequin. And it was like, oh my goodness, they showed the bra. And that's just the way it was. You just didn't see stuff like that. If someone wanted to look at pornography or naked pictures, they had to go looking for it. It wasn't coming into their, you know, into their inbox or anything else. So, and there was actual a moral code. There were moral standards. Yes was yes. No was no. Absolute truth. And people believed that. Most people, the majority of people, believed in moral standards and absolute truth. But today, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has a cell phone. There are lots and lots of TV channels now. I looked up how many channels there are in each different countries or different places, and I'm going to give you the top five. There was a list a mile long. The number five place was India, and they have 1,400 broadcast channels from India. The United States held the number four spot, which surprised me a little bit. I actually thought we might have the number one spot, but we had number four, at 2,218 channels broadcast from the United States. And we have a remote, so we can go from 8 a.m. to midnight just looking for something to watch, you know, going through all those channels. The European Union, which is all the different European countries together, was 2,700 channels. China was number two with 3,240 channels. And the number one channel was Russia, 7,306 broadcast channels. Crazy. It's like, what can you play on that many channels except the same thing over and over? Today, MASH would probably be considered a general audience admission movie compared to what we see today. In 2012, 78.9% of all households had a computer in the home. And of those, 94.8% used it connect to the internet. And that was 2 years ago, so that number's probably higher now. In May of 2013, 91% of all adults in the United States have a cell phone. And 78% of youth ages 12 to 17 have a cell phone. 56% of American adults and 37% of all teens have a smartphone. And this was a year ago, so I would imagine that's up as well. Foul language, I don't have any statistics on it, but it is an everyday conversation with our kids in school. My daughter even told me she has a teacher that cusses in class and nobody seems to care. So it's what they hear, it's what they live with every day. My boys kept telling me, Mom, we hear more bad words than we would ever see in that movie, because that's what they hear all day long, you know. Keep them away from it as long as you can, because they will be in front of it before long. In regards to bras on TV, you just look at commercials and look at, you know, movies, everything, you know. And even come into church on a Sunday morning or in the mall, you see shirts that are very sheer in nature, and, you know, somebody bought a real cute, bright, flowery bra, and they want everybody to see it, so they wear it under something everybody can see it. Or you've got bra straps hanging out, or you've got, it's just a part of our clothing. It's no longer Victoria's Secret. it's just what we, you know, it's what they want to show. And that is, you know, two words that says it all right there is Victoria's Secret and their ads. We all carry access to pornography in our hands. We don't have to go dumpster diving anymore. We just have to pull it out of our back pocket. And we don't even ask for it to come. It just comes. Because remember, 91% of adults have a smartphone or a cell phone. And there is just no absolute truth anymore. Oh, wait, yes, there is. It's called the Bible. That is still relevant, and it is still absolute truth. And it is the thing that we have to depend on. And our culture wants to say no, but it is. And that is the foundation of what we need to teach our kids, because there is a moral truth, there is an absolute truth, and God said what it is, and that's what we need to live by. Now, a lot of this may not seem to be related to sex in our culture, but it is, because our culture is very rampant with Satan's efforts to negate God's moral standards and the code that he's put out there. One of what I believe is Satan's most successful ways of doing that is just by subtlety, by deception, and desensitizing our kids to those things. They come in a little bit at a time. You know, one time it's one scene of, you know, a couple walking into a bedroom, and then 6 months later it's in the bed. You know, it just, they just build on it. Let's see. This book called From Santa to Sexting, it's a very good book. Very, very good book. Very well written. Really recommend you read this one. It's really good. Recently, Abercrombie, the children's division of Abercrombie & Fitch, marketed a padded bikini top for girls as young as 8 years of age. The top, ostensibly designed to cover up breast buds, was originally pitched as the Ashley push-up triangle. Apparently, the retailer dropped the words push-up due to parental outcry. Go, parents! Back in 2002, Abercrombie had underwear for girls ages 8 to 14 that was labeled, had like a print on it that was labeled eye candy and wink wink. These are for children. Again, parents objected and these products were removed. And this was 12 years ago. I wonder today if parents, if they did it again and remarketed it, if parents would outcry. I would hope they would, but I don't know. While Abercrombie may be among the most aggressive retailers selling sex to mothers and their daughters, this company is not alone. Have you been to your favorite store lately and tried to buy something for your middle school daughter that is not a strapless dress, a skin-tight skirt, or a 6-inch jean short? It's tough to find clothes that cover them up. Some moms call today's clothing for young girls hooker wear, as they comb the stores for appropriate clothing for their daughters. And it is very hard. I have a teenage daughter, and to try to go buy a tank top, I mean, you go and you find tank tops that are just, you gotta get a tank top to wear under your tank top because they're so low cut. Things are very short. My daughter's tall, she's 5'9", 5'9 and a half. So to find skirts that aren't up to here, you know, it's very difficult to find kids, clothes for kids. Our kids are being inundated with sex everywhere they turn. In the songs they sing, I've got some lyrics that I looked up, and I will tell you, when I was looking up some of this stuff, I just felt like I needed to go home and take a shower when I was done with it, because there's just so much out there that's just, and I tried to be actually really, I didn't go out there, I tried to be real careful about what I looked up, but just to give you a sample, this is a song that's very popular. There's some of the more popular songs right now in pop culture, one called Blurred Lines, you've probably heard of that. It says, where is that part? Here we go. What do they make dreams for when you got them jeans on? What do we need steam for? You, the hottest bitch in this place. I feel so lucky, hey, hey, hey. You want to hug me, hey, hey, hey. What rhymes with hug me, hey, hey, hey? One thing I ask of you, let me be the one you back that ass to. This is pop culture that our kids are regularly listening to. This one right here is a little more tame, but it's funny to me because Dave Carl, our children's pastor, said a couple years ago, his daughter, his younger daughter, was just singing with the music and these words came out of her mouth and he was like, what? You know, it says, rain makes corn, corn makes whiskey. Whiskey makes my baby feel a little frisky. which sounds pretty innocent, kind of when you're an adult, you don't really think much about it. But if you hear it come out of an 8-year-old's mouth, it has a whole new meaning. You know, what is my 8-year-old singing that song for? And this one is a song called, the title alone is all you really need to know, is Get Lucky, is the title of it. And part of it says, we've come too far to give up who we are, so let's raise the bar and our cups to the stars. And I have no idea what that even means. She's up all night to the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get lucky. We're up all night to the sun. We're up all night to get some. We're up all night for good fun. We're up all night to get lucky. And then it says, we're up all night to get lucky about like 20 more times. It's just, this is Daft Punk. I've never even heard of them, but I'm sure they're, these are some of the number one, the top songs that are going on right now. Number one video game. Does anybody in here, I'll ask this question different than I did earlier, have in your home the game Grand Theft Auto? Anybody? I'm very glad to hear that. Grand Theft Auto 5, this is the most successful and most popular video game there is. And this has all kinds of stuff in here about violence and torture and unbelievable stuff on that end. But this was the part that just really, really got me. It was talking about the different characters. It's a game where you can kind of create your own little movie, basically. It's a storyline that you do different stuff and you create your own story. And in talking about the characters, it says, many can be turned into sexual subjects, too. You can experience as many lap dances and close-up camera shots of naked stripper breasts as your virtual wallet can afford. Flirting and fleshy caressing can lead to off-camera intercourse. Picking up a prostitute for a moaning quickie in the alley is an option. And now you can also help out scandal-sniffing paparazzo by shooting some video of a teen TV celebrity in the midst of a realistic-looking, barely-covered anal sex. From online sex sites to full frontal male nudity to casual sex conversations between a brother and sister to misogynistic radio commercials involving women in urinals, the sexual visuals and discussions are as vulgar as they are diverse, including even images of rutting animals for gamers of viewing pleasure. You can also put money in the G-string of a stripper in this game. This was, if you're not familiar with Plugged In Online, are y'all familiar with the Plugged In from Focus on the Family? I highly recommend you get really familiar with that website. It's fantastic for reviews of movies and songs and video games. That's where I got this. But I'm going to read a little bit of the review of Grand Theft Auto from the Secular Review. It says, Grand Theft Auto 5 is a complicated and fascinating game, one that fumbles here and there and has an unnecessary strain of misogynistic nastiness running through it. But it also does amazing things no other open world game has attempted before, using multiple perspectives to put you in the thick of cinematic heist sequences and other exhilarating multi-layered missions like no open world game before. Los Santos, I think, is the setting of this game. It says, your time in Los Santos may leave you with a few psychological scars, but you shouldn't let that stop you from visiting. So it knows it's there, but they say, hey, you know, but the fun is worth it, right? So that's kind of what our kids are up against right now. Our kids are looking around at culture, and they think it's okay because it's everything they see. They don't have a previous culture to say, oh, this was better, this is worse. This is what it is to them. And unless we treat sin and they see sin as vileness, as just wicked, then it's not going to change. If we don't show them that God says this is sin, our culture says it is not. Our culture has basically wiped sin out of the dictionary, as far as I'm concerned. It's just, you know, if it's good for you, go for it. It's maybe not for me, but, you know, everybody can kind of pick what's okay. That's not what God says. And unless we treat sin as sin and teach our kids how wretched we are in the light of God's holiness, they won't think what they're doing is wrong. In Deuteronomy 6, God instructed the Israelites, these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons. God expected the Israelites, they didn't have the Bible written out at that time. They didn't have what we have to look and see and be reminded of the miracles that God. The only way they knew what God had done for their people was by parents telling their children and parents reminding their children, hey, this is where we came from. This is what God did for us. This is what God said. This is what God commanded. And we are commanded to do the same thing. We are their parents, and as parents, it is our responsibility to make sure they see what Scripture says and that we pass that on to them. So they're not looking at culture going, oh, well, this is okay because everybody says it's okay. God says it's not okay. I recently conducted a survey of youth. The survey I did was actually 7th to 12th grade, but the data I'm going to give you today is just the high school portion. And this was just to see kind of what they're facing. What are our kids experiencing in regards to temptation and sex and online stuff? So these are what we found out. 90% of these high school kids have a smart device, 90% of them. And of those 90%, 81% have unfiltered internet access on their smart device. So they are carrying around access. And if they're boys, they're probably already looking at porn. My son is a senior, and he said, oh, Mom, he goes, every guy in high school has seen porn, every guy. It's just there. Like I said, they don't. Most of them don't have, you know, they don't have to go dumpster diving anymore, so it's right there for them. 43% of them have a computer in their room. That's a little more than one in four. That's almost half. And of those that have a computer in their room, 70% have unfiltered access to the internet. 55% of these students have accidentally seen pornography photos on their smart device or on their computer. That's over half. And once, particularly with boys, but I would say it's true with anybody, once you've seen that image, it's burned in your brain. And so for them, their young minds, that's just burned in there, and they're never going to be able to get rid of that. And so then, you know, particularly God wired men to be visual, and so then it becomes, you know, and then it becomes a problem even more and more. 55%, oh, I already said that. 52% of these students have friends who have already had sex. 9% of them have sent inappropriate photos of themselves via Snapchat, text, or some other means. 26% do not think that watching music videos with sexual content is inappropriate. They think it's okay. That surprised me a little bit. 16% of them have social media accounts that their parents do not know about. 6% of these students look at pornography at least once a week. 22% say homosexuality is wrong for them, but is an acceptable lifestyle for others and it's not their business. 87% hear kids talk about sex at school, and of the 87%, 26% say they hear it all the time. And 13% believe that oral sex is not really sex. I was talking to a mom who said that her son, he's a freshman, he comes home from school every day and like makes a beeline for the bathroom because he's got to go to the restroom so bad. She's like, why don't you use the bathroom at school? And he's like, Mom, I am not going into the bathroom at school because that's where they have oral sex, they're doing drugs, whatever it is. He has made a choice, which is great that he has made that choice, but he doesn't want to be in there because that's where all the stuff happens, is in the bathrooms at school. We need to be alarmed and we need to be armed. And another fact that I didn't mention to you about these kids is this group of students that I interviewed are our high school students here at Stonebriar Community Church. I interviewed them through student ministries on a Sunday morning. They all anonymously filled out. We didn't put any names on it, so they filled out the form. So these are our kids. And 96% of them attend church regularly. So it's alarming. And this is what they're dealing with. A culture that sees sex as a free-for-all and no longer portrays or sees it as a beautiful privilege in an act of marriage is bombarding our kids. They don't know what to think. They believe what they learn, and they're learning that sex is as open and free as eating a candy bar in public. It just is, and nobody seems to care. In this book, From Santa to Sexting, the author states, if you believe that Sesame Street taught your 4-year-old something, you better believe that MTV is teaching your 14-year-old something. And a quote from the U.S. Department of Justice in a pornographic statistic document was put out by Covenant Eyes. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that. That's an accountability software. It says, "Never before in the history of telecommunications media in the United States has so much indecent and obscene material been so easily accessible by so many minors in so many American homes with so few restrictions." Some of the things that your kids, I was going to share this with you too, I forgot. Of that survey, had a friend who works at a Garland high school, public school. And he took the survey and did it with his high school kids, which is why I left off the junior high percentages in here, just so we could compare apples to apples. But of those kids, I'm going to show you the differences between the public school kids and there. So of these high school kids in Garland, 24% of them said they attended church regularly. So ours were 96%, 24% of these kids did. So on the smart device, we had 90%. They had 98% that had a smart device. Not, I mean, a little more, but not a huge difference. Most of these are like that. There's not a huge difference on most of them. Of ours, 81% of our kids were unfiltered internet, 90% of theirs were unfiltered internet. We had 43% that have a computer in their room, with a 70% of that with unfiltered internet. At the Garland High School, 54% had a computer in their room, and 98% of those kids had unfiltered internet, almost all of them. We had 55% of our students who had accidentally seen pornographic photos, and Garland actually had less. They had 52% that had accidentally seen pornographic photos on their computer or smart device. 52% of ours had friends who'd already had sex. 84% of the kids in Garland had friends who'd already had sex. We had 9% who had sent inappropriate self photos, and they had 21%. We had 26% who didn't think that the music videos with sex content was inappropriate. 76% of the kids Garland did, thought it was okay. We had 16% who had social media accounts their parents didn't know about. The Garland school had 38%. We had 6% look at pornography at least once a week. Garland school had 18%. 22% of our kids said homosexuality is wrong for them, but is an acceptable lifestyle choice for others and not their business. The Garland school had 54%. And of that 54%, Garland, I didn't write it down on here, but Garland kids said it was 36% of them said, yes, it's okay. What I did on that question was, it was a statement, and it said homosexuality is an acceptable lifestyle choice. And their answers were yes, no, or not for me, but for others it's okay, it's not my business. So that was their choices. And the statistics I gave you were the third choice. We actually did have about 4% of our kids who said, yes, it's okay. So I don't know if that means they are or if they're just very open about it, I don't know. But we had 87% of our kids who hear kids talk about sex at school. Garland, 100% of their kids hear kids talk about sex. My guess is that 13% is homeschool kids whose mother would kill them if they talked about it, which is good. But I mean, just because everything else is so close that that's probably the only place that they are going that they're not hearing it on a regular basis. And then we had 13% believe that oral sex is not really sex, and they said 37% of them did not believe it. And we asked a question about abstinence, too, and several of the kids asked for that to be defined. Yeah, so I don't even know what it means. So it wasn't, the Garland School, 28% of the kids thought abstinence was old-fashioned, and 5% of our kids, so that's good that we had 95% who think it's okay, that they think it's still relative. Let's see. Did I do that already? Yes, I did. Okay, some of the things your kids are up against. Social media is a big one. Facebook, you're probably all familiar with that. Snapchat, or is there anybody not familiar or ever never heard of Snapchat? Snapchat, in my opinion, in its format, is one of the more dangerous ones. And it was probably, I don't know why it was designed, but I'm guessing it was designed by people who didn't want accountability. Because basically, if I have Snapchat and my friend has Snapchat, we go into that app and I can take a photo of anything and send it to my friend through that app. And they can open it up, view the photo for 10 seconds, and then the photo goes away. So there's no accountability, there's no paper trail. So if you are a parent whose child has a smartphone but you check it regularly, there's no accountability because it's not there. However, it is still on every network that it touched and hopped through to get from phone A to phone B and will always be there. So it's out there. Kids are thinking it's gone, but you know, I don't know who and how and if people do it very often to go dig for stuff like that, but it is out there forever. Phone cameras are a big problem. Kids are watching a movie and you think you're having a little family time and y'all are watching Frozen together in the living room on DVD and oh, I gotta go to the bathroom, get up, go to the bathroom. They go in the bathroom, pull up their shirt, take a picture of themselves and send it to their friend. And you have no idea that that just happened because you're having family night. So how could that happen? So, I mean, these kind of things are happening and that's kind of a goofy picture, but it's out there. Kids are doing that all the time, taking pictures of themselves and sending them to each other. In this book, it talks about a little girl who was 13 who liked a boy and decided to send a text, a photo of herself nude to this boy that she liked, thinking that he would be the only one that would see it. And it went viral, and the ramifications of that on her were so great that she committed suicide. Because there's no way to rein it back in once it's out there. And kids don't keep stuff like that private. They just aren't that good at keeping that kind of stuff secret. So it's really, really bad. And that, I mean, you probably know this, but that's called sexting when you use text messages to send any sexual content or sexual photos. And that happens pretty frequently as well. And you don't know, I mean, you can be in a crowd and somebody can take a photo of whatever, you know. So kids today are walking around like this and you think they're reading a text and they're sitting there, you know, taking a photo of something. My son will take my phone every now and then, hey mom, I need to look at the time or whatever. And he'll grab my phone for a second, I'm like, give me my phone back. And in that time, he'll have turned the camera, and he just does it for fun, but he'll have turned the camera on himself and I'll have about 40 pictures of him on my camera roll, you know. And he'll just sit there and he'll just do. I don't even realize he's doing it and all of a sudden I'm like, delete. I don't need 40. I love you, but I don't need 40 pictures of you on my camera. So it just can happen so quick. Video games are huge. And I read you the quote about Grand Theft Auto, right? Or was that the first session? Okay, kept trying to keep up with myself. But that is huge. This is the worst, I think, and one of the most, but it's one of the most, it is the number one video game that kids are playing. And if I'd have known that when I did the survey, I would have put that on the survey to see how many of them are playing that game, because that would have been interesting to know. Music videos are a big problem. There's a face that goes with that problem right now. And this is a girl who came from a Christian home who did a great many years of a cute, innocent little show and became wildly popular and has made a choice to just be extremely sexually explicit and everything that she does. And it's our little girls who used to really like Hannah Montana are, you know, hopefully not liking her, but for that, but it's just, it's everywhere. And even if people think it's bad, then the news media makes such a big deal out of it. Everybody goes and looks at the video or, you know, so it's getting it out there even more. Music lyrics are part of the problem. Internet, you don't have to go looking for it. We've kind of talked about that. It pops up everywhere. Gender choice is a big sexual issue for kids too. When my kids were going into middle school, my kids now, our youngest is 16, so we have 16, 18, and 21. When they were in middle school age, somebody told me, I don't remember who it was, but said that kids in middle school at that time, that was a few years ago, were asking each other, what are you going to be? In reference to gender choice. And so it was just becoming, oh, it's a conversation to have, you know, well, it's not a sin, it's not a sexual sin, it's a choice. And so people, they just talk about it like it's, you know, you can have brown hair, blonde hair, gay, straight, what's it going to be? And so that's kind of where it's going. In this book, they have a thing that says, what helps young adolescents accept a heterosexual role identity? Number one, witnessing a happy marriage between parents. Number two, having positive experiences with the opposite sex, and 3, possessing a strong positive identification with the parent of the same sex. So it's really important to have those relationships with your kid, and we're about to talk about that a little bit. So how do we change all of this? Is there any way we can change this? And is there anything we can do about it? Because what we have to do is teach our kids that sin is sin and God is holy. And in the light of God's holiness, we need to expose that sin and show them that's what it is. And if they don't recognize that, if they don't have a relationship with Christ that sees sin as sin and God is holy, you can put every boundary, every filter, everything in place. And ultimately, yeah, they'll obey while they're young, but ultimately they're just not going to think it's a big deal. They're going to think you're a stingy or a bossy parent, which they probably will anyway, but sometimes that's okay. So one of the first things we need to do is, as a parent, we've got to make sure that our own walk with Christ is vibrant and growing. Because if you want your child to have that, they're watching you. And that's going to have the absolute most impact on them. So if your relationship is not there, don't expect theirs to be. And don't tell them to have it, because then you're a hypocrite. And you don't want to do that. And so many of us adults in our culture, I think, are maybe not as bad in the place where the kids are, but we have become in a place where we've accepted a lot of sin that's out there as cultural norm and maybe aren't offended by it as much as we should be. And so we have to kind of research our own hearts and our own relationships with Christ and say, what is my relationship like? Is it vibrant? And do I see sin as sin and God as holy? And do I need to make some steps in my own life to clean that up a little bit and be revolted by some of the stuff I see instead of accepting of it? Because our kids will see that in us. And they don't expect us to be perfect. So if they see us say, you know what, I watched that movie with you the other day and I really made a big mistake because it was really not appropriate and I made a poor choice and I want to ask you to forgive me or apologize for it. That goes a long way with our kids. Work on your marriage. If you're in a single family home, if you're a single parent, then make sure that you really are working on your relationship with Christ, because that's going to be the important thing for you, is to have that and model that. But if you're if you're a married couple, your marriage is the core of your child's security. And it is the most important relationship in your family. Our culture says children first, but it's our spouse first. It's God first, and then our spouse. And because the husband-wife relationship is what started the family in the first place. And if we don't have that strength and that commitment to model Christ and to love each other the way Christ loved the church, what are our kids going to see? How are they going to learn? And their world feels a little insecure, and they begin to question things when they don't feel that. So that's an area where we can all make sure that we're really focused on. And it's not going to be perfect. You're still going to have arguments. You're still going to have things that you have to work through, but that's okay. As long as your kids see you committed to it and working towards a relationship that's tight in Christ, that's strong in Christ, and that's working on being strong and staying committed to each other, that is huge for your kids. And if you have sexual sins or things in your past that you just can't get past, God forgives us. He is a God that's a God of forgiveness. And He has washed you clean in Christ's blood. So if you need help doing that, if you need counseling, but get to a place where you can allow yourself to be free of your past sins so that you can step forward, because that's what God wants from us. He wants to accept His forgiveness and live in freedom through Him, and then we can move forward in Him. Mom and dad's marriage relationship, both emotional and sexual, remains the major factor in the attitudes of their offspring development. For parents teach about life and love and sex all the time. Children absorb more than they'll ever hear. Children absorb more by watching than they'll ever hear said in any parent-child relationship. So what they're watching in you is what they're learning the most from. The third thing we need to do is make sure we're building relationships with our kids. What is the end time? 1:30? Okay, just making sure. We need to make sure we're building relationships and starting young. And if your kids are already teenagers, that's okay. Work on building that relationship now if you don't have it. But if you wait until they're 13 and you go, oh no, they're starting middle school. I got to get in their life, and I got to get in the middle of everything, and I got to make sure they don't have sex, and I got to make sure they don't have this. And you've never made those efforts when they're younger, they're not going to listen to you. So start building those relationships in more than just being a boss, so to speak, you know, the bossy parent, but just in loving your kids and hanging out with them and in doing things with them. And yes, you need to be giving them discipline and boundaries. That's your job too. But they need to see that love. They need to see that you love them unconditionally, whether they make mistakes or not, that they can come to you when they have a problem. Because then if you're in their lives all the way going up, when you begin to have these conversations or you begin to have these rough spots when they're middle school, high school age, if you've already established that relationship, it's a whole lot easier. It's not perfect, and every kid's going to be different. Be a student of your child as part of that relationship building and find out what makes them tick and find out the best effective way to discipline them. They're not all the same. We had one that if we swatted him one time when he was little, he would, from that point forward, I just remember when Walter was, when he was little, he was crawling, Ryan was crawling. We'd spank him one time for something, and then if he tried again, Walter would just go like that, and he's gone. You know, so he knew, and he was real compliant personality. And then you've got one that's completely opposite, that you've got to tell him 10 times to do something. Or our middle child, the one thing everybody says don't do is reason with your children. But know your child. Yes, we used corporal punishment. took him to work, gave him a smack. No. On him too, but he was the type of personality that there were times when sitting down and explaining it to him worked way better than a spanking. So you've got to get to know your kids and what works with them, and that's part of building that relationship. And then they say, hey, they get me. And then maybe I will listen to them because they're trying. In our quest to keep our children safe, have we settled for smoke and mirrors? Have we put our faith in things, not relationships? Have things over the years become a substitute for on-site parental supervision and presence? As parents, we plan for virtually every exigency. Antibacterial lotion? Check. Kids who know how to stop, drop, and roll? Check. Kids who run from strangers? Check. Charged up cell phone to receive our incessant texts? Check. Many of our children have every gadget known to modern man, but do they have us? Do they own our hearts, our time? In short, do they have warm, secure, stable connections with us? That is what's so important for our kids. Then you could put together an action plan. And that can involve so many things. You can do time limits, and I highly recommend that. Time limits on video game playing or time on their phone, particularly if your kids are younger and they have phones. Limit their time, because it's the older they get, the harder it is to pull back the reins on that sort of thing. And I think people make jokes about it all the time, but everywhere you go, you see a room full of kids and they're all doing this. Now, everybody's on their cell phone, or even adults for that matter. So make sure that you know your child, that you know what their tolerance level is. Some kids can play video games all day and it doesn't affect them, and some can't, but that doesn't mean you need to, but just put some boundaries in place. Check your kids' phones. You probably, more than likely, your children are not paying the bill on that cell phone. You own that phone. You are the parent. You are responsibility for that child. You have to sign everything for them. You are their authority. So yes, you have the right to look at their text messages. They don't have the right to have privacy from you because they're your children. And yes, we can be respectful and all that, but when it comes to technology, our kids don't know how to balance that. They don't know how to process all of that. So we need to be that second eye looking at what they're doing, making sure. And sometimes it's as innocent as their tone of voice in an email to say, you know, that really doesn't sound nice when you say that. What? They don't realize that it comes across wrong. So there's a lot of teaching moments there, but you have the authority and the right to get into their text messages, to look at their internet history, to look at whatever, their Facebook pages, make sure if they have any social media, you're a friend on them. So you can check everything they post on there. I personally don't think they need smart devices when they're 5 years old or 6 years old or 9 years old. When I was doing some research, I was talking to the principal at one of the elementary schools over here. He's a great Christian man, and it's the school my kids went to at Smith over here. And he told me he walked into a fourth grade class, 9-year-olds, 16 out of 20 had smart devices. In a fourth grade class. And so it's just opening the door. And while they're in the fourth grade, maybe they're not doing anything, but it's just opening that door to more opportunities for things to come to them and for them to have access to see things they don't need to see. And also constant use with electronics affects their brain development. I don't know a lot about that, but I did read some things that talked about that, and it can delay and mess up some of their brain development. The most important thing we can do is pray. God says pray without ceasing. He also says to cast your cares on him, for he cares for you. And I know I'm a parent, you guys are parents, and I know we have cares. We care about our kids, and we have concerns for our kids, and we have concerns for their future, and there's things that come up that we just don't know what to do with. God knows everything about them. He knit them together in our wombs. He knows every hair on their head, and he is the one who can do the most with them. He's the only guarantee we have. And so as we pray for them and we model a life for Christ and we teach them that that's really the most important thing in life. And that means living counterculture. Daniel had to do that when he was in exile in Babylon. Everything he did was pretty much counterculture. And he knew that he was doing it at the risk of his life. He knew that if he did not bow down and pray to that idol, he was pray to God. If he prayed to God, he was going, I got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, flip there. But same deal. If he knew that if he bowed and prayed to God after the king said, don't pray to any other God but me, he could get cast into a den of hungry lions. And he did. But God protected him. But he was willing to make that risk because he knew he had full understanding of the holiness of God and that that was way more important to him than anything else in culture. And that's our goal for our kids. And it's a big goal, and it's a hard thing to do in our culture, but that should be our mindset to try to move them in that direction. Because our kids must learn to live counterculture. So what we're going to do, do y'all have any questions real quick? We have a couple more minutes. Does anybody have any questions real quick? Anything? And one of the things we're working on doing, too, is putting together some kind of follow-up classes. So we're going to look at putting together a class you can take that will actually give you some tactical things on how to filter or how to take care of some of these boundaries that if you're not tech savvy or if you don't know what's out there, if you don't know what filtering softwares are out there, things like that. Yeah, and we're actually going to try to figure out this series right here is a fantastic series. It's called the Learning About Sex series. It's a Christian group, and I'm trying to remember, it's the Biblical Institute for Parenting or something like that. I can't remember. And it has like a whole series of books that are age graded that teach a 3 to 5 year old appropriate things that they need to know and goes up. But yes, one of the things we would like to do, that's another one, is to take some of this type of material and have a class where you can kind of, to give you some encouragement to teach those things and learn those things. There's also classes in that relationship right now. I don't think there's one for girls, but they're working on it. The Honor Corps, I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but that's a father-son deal. Have you done it? Father-son thing where they go for 6 weeks or four or five weeks, something like that.
Yeah, and then they went camping.
And they go camping. And they're teaching men how to teach their boys how to be men of God, and it's really cool, and that helps build our relationship. So we've got some things that are, and we're going to try to start a parenting class called Spiritual Parenting that's also really good about, has some good information about how to teach some of those spiritual truths to your kids so that they can begin focusing that way as opposed to, just tactical, but, counterculture kind of thoughts and what you can do in your own homes that is practical to get kids spiritual minded. So we're kind of working on some of those things.